Think of yourself as a little kid. There's a full moon and jack-o'-lanterns in all the windows, and then there's this one house with this really strange kind of grip on the whole neighborhood. At dinner, sometimes you hear your parents talking about it, but they didn't really know any more than you did. Just that it was alleged that satanic things went on there sometimes. Well, I've never been sure if there is something wrong with the house or not. All I knew is that when I got close to it, I had this eerie sensation that this wasn't like any other house. Robert Curran, The Haunted.
Welcome back to this week's episode of The Wellhouse Exorcism. This is your ghost of a host of the most, Shanna.
It's PJ.
No, it's not.
It's Pukwa, PJ.
Oh, so good. So good. Jeez.
I'm host and this just goes off the rails.
Mm.
She's got her chocolate.
Got this drink here. Hold on. No, right?
Mm. Oh my gosh.
It's so good.
I do not do that.
Pukwa PJ's in charge this week, so I thought I'd give him a taste of his own medicine.
I don't do that. Sometimes I drink out of a sippy pouch.
Yeah, exactly. I would like to say thank you to our listener, Penny, who bought me a foam bat to use on PJ, but I hid it for this week because he's in charge. So, PJ, what are we talking about?
We will be talking about the Smurl Haunting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Finally.
Yes. This is a heck of a story. Like, first off, no dates match. Anyway, it's insane.
Excellent.
How no one can get their story straight at all. So putting this together,
that's validity,
was terrible. Then I finally found the book that they wrote, because they wrote a book just like the Amityville family. Their name escapes me. But, you know, these people wrote a book
too. The Warrens wrote a book on the devil on trial when Arnie.
Yeah. So. And so, the book that I'll be using is called The Haunted by Jack Curran, but the, two family members who owned the house, Jack and Janet Smurl, are also credited with writing it because there are several interview sections where they'll chime in.
Her name's Janet.
Yes.
I have a song from Rocky Horror Picture just stuck in my head.
Others I'll be using are The Cemetery Traveler by Ed Snyder, The Weather Channel.
That's awesome.
Occultworld.com, okay. Which I found out after I found the book that they basically just took the book and you like cliff notes it.
Well, good. So, all right, so it's the Spark Notes too long didn't read version.
Yeah, pretty much.
All
right. PittstonProgress.com.
All right.
And I also have a newspaper article, too, that I'll cite. I didn't write down in my works cited page, though. I apologize.
Well.
Sorry, English teacher.
I'm the ghost of the host, so.
I have it parenthetical, though, when we get
learning.
To it.
You're learning.
It's the 1970s. And.
No, it's not.
It is. Use your mind.
Oh.
We're going back to the 1970s.
Okay. We're just going right into it, aren't we?
Yeah.
I'm eating a Starburst now.
I see this.
It's very lemony. I am really enjoying not being in charge.
So, 1972, Hurricane Agnes hits. Now, I don't know about you, but my mom talked about Hurricane Agnes a lot. And
I felt like we were there, even though we weren't there.
With good reason, because according to the Weather Channel, it was one of the largest hurricanes ever recorded, ever.
Hmm.
It was also the most damaging hurricane, with an estimated $3.2 billion in damages.
I did know that.
And 117 people were killed.
Mm-hmm.
There was also unheard amounts of flooding in the Wilkes-Barre, 44, Scranton area. And my mom liked to use the famous line that I think she came up with. The dead rose, to which she was referring to the 44 cemetery where 2,700 coffins were unearthed by the water and floated across town and ended up in people's like porches and like crashing through their windows.
Lawns,
and But yeah, she, and completely unironically, she would, she'd say, the dead rose.
I didn't realize that revelation's going to happen in the 70s. Like, imagine you go outside with your four-year-old to play in the back lawn, like, drinking your mint iced tea, and then all of a sudden, ah, that's there. Today could have gone differently.
So, one person from the Cemetery Traveler, he said that as a teenager, hearing about all this, all these bodies and coffins everywhere, he's like, well, we gotta go check this out. And he said that...
Later, he'd make a song where he'd go, and then the bodies hit the floor. And then someone else would take that song, and he'd be like, oh, he stole my song.
That song is about a mosh pit, not about real bodies.
Exactly. He said, let the bodies hit the floor, and then a person took that later and turned it into a different song, and now this kid is angry.
Hmm.
I'm trying to be you, but I can't.
Just keep trying. You'll get it.
Yeah, I'm going to get it.
But anyways, he said that it was like the fencing was all boarded up and everything, so you couldn't even see in. And he went, well, I did what any teenager would do. I crawled under it.
He didn't break it?
And
yeah, dog, you're digging a hole?
He said it was like a horrible decision to because like the smell was just terrible. But, you know, he confirms, he's like, yeah, there were there's just empty graves everywhere. Like half the cemetery was just gone because the water just washed it away.
And then he found a hand on the ground and he said, hey, look, he lent me a hand. Look, I'm doing it. Heckle, heckle, heckle.
So displaced from their home in Wilkes-Barre due to the flood, Jack and Janet Smurl had to relocate. So they move 18 minutes north to West Pittston, Pennsylvania.
What a sight they saw. I'm sorry, just trying to a better scene, less stinky scene.
They take up a duplex at 328 and 330 Chase Street. And I say and because they bought both halves with their parents, John and Mary.
Oh, okay.
And John and Mary took one half. Jack, Janet, and their kids took the other half. Dawn and Heather are the kids' names. There they are. So, Jack is a neuro...
Dawn, as in D-O-N, or Dawn, D-A-W-N?
Dawn.
Dawn, okay.
Yeah.
That's what I have in my head. Two girls or a boy and a girl. Mm-hmm. I gotta get it in my head.
They paid $18,000 for the whole thing.
What a steal.
Yeah.
And it's the 70s, though, so I'm not sure when.
Well, the house is old. It was built in 1893, so it was definitely a fixer-upper, but Jack is very handy, so they replaced
a
lot.
But this is the 1970s. It's built in the 1890s, he said. The house is less than 100 years old. What a steal. See, I can math that.
I mean, yeah, yeah.
I just don't know about inflation for today's standards.
So, along with being handy, though, Jack is also a neuropsychiatric technician, which means he does ECT.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Yeah.
And this was during a time where ECT was getting a bad name.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he saw all the long-term good effects it had on people, and he was very proud of his job and defended it
heartily.
So he must have been pretty good at his job. You know, he was one of the reliable
ones. He could buy a house that was less than 100 years old.
That's right.
In West Pittston.
So his wife, Janet, loved babies, gossip, and music.
So she's me.
She... was by no means a hippie, but she did believe in a lot of things they stood for. They were very active in...
like, free healthcare?
Like, anti-war,
okay.
Things like that. Yeah. I'm like, so you're just a hippie then? Without the name?
Whoa. I'm an adult. I just agree with some of your ideas.
So, to quote The Haunted, which I'll be doing a lot, those who knew the Smurls... in that first 18-month period, said that they rarely knew happier couples.
Aww.
You had to look back to the dreams of previous generations in anthracite country to understand what Jack and Janet had come to symbolize. Success. Not flashy cars, but a dissolute and selfish... and not a dissolute and selfish lifestyle.
I was going to say, it was very...
not trendy clothes and trendy thinking, but success as this part of the country understood it. They toiled long, they paid their bills, their family was the center of their lives, their belief in God grew stronger yearly, and they were willing to extend through their civic activities the kind of charity that Christ taught was necessary for a holy life.
How are they not us right now? I'm just, hold on.
You can see all this, their neighbors would tell you, in the way that Jack, when he arrived home, would sweep up and hug his and kiss his wife and kids.
Oh, okay, they're not us, never mind. All right.
So for 18 months, everything was great. And I have a picture of the house. There's the house as it looks today.
Okay, it really looks like our house, too.
It kind of does.
You called the Smurl house. I see what you're doing. We already had this story. It's called the Wellhouse Exorcism.
I don't like how you're making these connections.
Oh, you're gonna
I'm researching it. I'm not connecting any of this. I'm just like, oh, this family's screwed. I have to say, we had it so easy compared to these people. Like, so easy.
Survivor's Tales. Okay, I'm ready.
Yeah. Okay.
Give it to me, Janet.
The first thing that happened was they ordered a new rug for the living room. Something nice, you know. It gets delivered, they uncurl it. There's a stain on the carpet. And it's wet. Like, it just happened. So they clean the stain. 2 days later, it's back. And so they clean it again. A couple days after that, stain comes back again. This brownish red stain.
So they buy a carpet that's already stained.
Yeah, either like, again, it's one of those things where like some people say the stain was there. Some say it appeared shortly after.
Okay.
Either like, way, they clean it and it goes away. And then it comes back.
Y'all bought a haunted rug. You send that back. Problem fixed. Done.
There it is. That's the whole cause of it.
They should have shopped on Temu. That's all I'm saying.
Shortly after that, Jack's TV burst into flames. And now, it didn't just catch on fire. The way he describes it as, there was like a bomb was in this thing, and it blew.
In the defense of the TV, they do look like bombs. There was this wet rug. They bought a haunted rug, so therefore, ergo, TVs are going to explode.
Their pipes would constantly burst.
But like, did like a little explode, or like a... back to the
again, TV. He said, like, it's like there was a bomb in it. Like, it... went.
Did it leave like a mess? Like, was there like a charred?
I couldn't see. Like, I wasn't sure if there are specifics or not. Nothing that I could.
I was wondering how big of a bomb went off here with this TV.
Yeah. From what they say, it burst in the flame. There was like a mild fire. Nothing like structurally damaging.
The haunted
like that,
rug. But... one of the children to go outside and play because they kept getting their dirty feet on the rug, making a brown stain. It's the rug's fault.
Obviously. Freaking rug. So their pipes would constantly burst, despite frequent repairs. John personally repaired many of them, knowing that the work was done properly. One drain pipe, specifically, was repaired 5 times before it just became completely unusable. All of these things are these 3 things that we just explained are very easy to science away. You know, like...
the pipes, that's just homeownership. Yeah. Welcome to the money pit.
We have a spigot in our bathtub that we're on our 4th one in a year right
now. We have water that corrodes everything, apparently.
Apparently.
Only in the bathtub.
Yeah. So, whatever's going on there, don't know. But
have we bought any rugs lately? No, we have not.
No, we haven't.
Okay, good.
So all those are pretty easy to explain away. You know, the TV was just a bad TV, you know.
Like, kids getting their dirty feet on the rug.
Yeah, the rug, like someone spilled on it, didn't fess up to it. You know, there are explanations for that. But then one day, Dawn, the eldest child, screamed in the middle of the night and came running into the parents' room. And she said that she saw people floating around in her bedroom. And... then this happened the next night, and it kept happening frequently after that.
They just wanted to play a polka. It's Pittston. They can join in. Come on, kid. It's fun.
So after this, why don't you move out? Well, all the constant repairs meant that they were
like
a little...
money, yeah.
Yeah, they're a little financially strapped.
I never ask why don't you move out, because we've been through that situation. Yeah. You can't afford to.
People who haven't been in that situation, though, that's always the first question, you know.
If you have money to spare, send it our way, and then people like us can move out of
our situation. Yeah, everyone's always like, I'd be out of there the next day. Like, okay.
No, you wouldn't.
Where would you go?
We did, and then we had to come back.
Yeah.
We visited family. So on a serious note, did she describe what they looked like? People just floating around her, like how many, were they in white, were they black, were they shadows? Like, did she ever explain what they looked like?
No. just that there were people, they would float around the room, things like that. Later, Jack, and this isn't in my script, so I can talk about it now. Jack does see two women, and they look like they're wearing, like, Victorian-era clothing. And they're, like, middle-aged-ish, like, 40s. And they constantly, like, whisper and stare at him while they're whispering. And
oh, they're those busybodies.
Yeah. And then, like, one of them, will, like, turns and looks at him, and her smile, like, turns into this, like, cartoonishly exaggerated smile as they're whispering about him and things like that.
See, initially I had a vision of the two geese from Aristocats, but now it's gone. Scandalous.
So other things that happened was their newly painted bathroom, which they are very proud of renovating.
It's expensive paint. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Now I'm just sad. I'm not ready. I'm not mentally prepared for the paint to be ruined.
The sink and bathtub were covered in scratches. One report said that the bathtub had, like, chunks taken out of it. Yeah.
Not okay.
I know.
I'm gonna get
angry. At least
angry.
In the bathtub, that means you have some traction, right? You don't slip on the porcelain.
Instead of buying the little cute little duckies.
Yeah.
But I want the duckies, because that tub costs money. If it's a 70s, that means it's going to be cast iron with porcelain overlay.
Yeah.
Something was heavy to get in, number one.
Oh, yeah.
Number two, expensive. And man, I would be so angry.
Mm-hmm.
Now this ghost just ticks me off. Take the dirty, nasty, haunted rug back. Go burn it outside.
So, they continue with the annoyances. In 1977, they have a set of twins, Sharon and Karen. And...
Sorry. What is that with, like, names that rhyme?
I hate it. It's so mean. Or, like, let's name all of our kids the same first letter. Like, that's just mean.
I also feel bad that now there's four girls. God bless Jack. We have one and we're good.
Other annoyances of the time. Sophie, we know you're listening. We love you.
We do love you.
Toilets would flush on their own.
That would make me angry if I'm with, like, public works water. Because that, like, costs money.
Yeah. Like, if it was a well, fine.
Yeah, whatever. Have at it, man.
But, yeah, every flush is just money.
Again, like Ray said, we're talking about Gettysburg. You know, I would go crazy. I would wreak havoc on the Wi-Fi. I'd enjoy the indoor plumbing. Like, look at this. And the water goes away. Like, that's cool, but stop wasting the water because I'm paying for it. It's not free.
Radios would turn on and, like, blare, volume full. And then they would, like, unplug the radio and just turn on again anyways. Yeah.
Again, modern appliances.
I know. Did you hear this music?
This is amazing. They wanted to dance the polka.
They would hear footsteps going up and down the stairs.
Oh, we've had that. We hate
chairs
that.
Rocking back and forth. And they would see the chairs moving.
Oh, yeah.
Like someone sitting in them. Drawers opening and closing. Strange smells filling the room. At first, the smells were described as odd, but not bad, just like weird smells,
like old lady smell,
I guess. So yeah. like in the office, it smells like death. You know, those weird things, yeah, that old people eat and their breath smells just terrible. Jack begins to feel strange caresses on his leg.
Oh my.
Yeah,
is it the Victorian with the creepy smile? Run, Jack, run.
Oh, no, it's worse.
Oh.
In 1985, things get really scary.
Hold up. They've been there for like 15 years now?
Uh-huh.
Wowzers.
So I have tried for hours to figure out what happened from 1977 to 1985. I have no idea.
Oh, right. They didn't move there in 1970. They moved there 70, in the 70s.
Yeah, 72 okay, was so the flood.
It's been less than 10 years.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. 77, they had the twins. So, like, it's been about 11
at least,
years.
Yeah. Well, 8 years at least.
Yeah, like 74, they moved into the house.
Oh, okay.
So,
gotcha. Okay.
So 11 years they've been there dealing with annoyances. But 1985, yeah, again, like, I don't know what happened from 77 to 85. I have no idea.
If they were too tired with the babies, they didn't care.
Yeah, even the book.
Twins. It's twins.
The Haunted, the one that they wrote. They just kind of gloss over that section
there.
They
had quiet times, too. The ghosts.
That's
are probably,
one heck of a quiet time.
The ghosts are probably just like twins. Like, oh, it's crying again. Yeah. Everyone took a break.
So, according to Grace Berlew of Pinston Progress, Plumbers were constantly called to look into the disgusting smell that permeated the air of the house. None of them could ever find a source of where it was coming from, but they all agreed it smelled like sulfur.
Okay.
The house was constantly cold, even if the thermostat was set high. And the smell was ever present the whole time.
Well, they're obviously in an depression stage then.
Yeah.
On a serious note, okay.
In the middle of the night...
With four babies in that house.
Yeah. Jeez. Blood-curdling screams would sound, and John and Mary on the other side of the duplex would hear obscene and abusive language coming from Jack and Janet's side of the house, even when they weren't home. They would just...
Oh.
Yeah.
All right. But what you don't know is Mary's just, like, putting a glass going, let me listen to this.
In February 1985... Janet was down in the basement doing laundry, and she takes a sniff of her Era laundry detergent and thinking, I wonder if I could just sniff this all day. When she hears from up the stairs, Janet, and she stops and she's like, what was that? Like, no way did I just hear my name.
I just need to sniff some more and then, laundry detergent.
And then almost immediately she hears Janet. Again. And at that point, she, like, closes up the detergent and puts it away. And then she hears Janet right behind her.
No! Oh, I would hate that so much. Okay.
She turns around and feels something in front of her as it says, Janet, again. At which point, she just runs.
Oh, yeah.
Upstairs.
I just feel... Now I'm getting, like, goosebumps because, like, I lived through a basement situation.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't doing laundry. I was flipping through laundry, but...
Yeah. A few days later, she felt something icy cold in the house. And announcing its arrival came the smell as well.
Well, at least there's that.
She looks to see a black human-shaped apparition. It was about 5 feet, 9 inches tall, with no facial features, but it did have a cape.
Ooh.
And it was in her kitchen, stayed there for a couple seconds, and then just vanished. She stood there dumbfounded for a minute or so.
So it was just a black shadow?
Yeah, okay. A humanoid figure. Couldn't make out any.
But you can make out the cape. Yeah. Okay.
And then she goes next door to tell Mary about it. And so she walks in and she's about to tell Mary what she just saw. And Mary goes, I just saw a black figure with a cape in my room.
Okay.
Yeah. So it, you know, left her and went through the wall to Mary. Yeah,
because the house had been a house before it was a duplex.
Exactly, yeah. So now, we're on to...
Men did wear capes in the Victorian time period.
Yep.
Interesting.
So now we're on to Heather, the younger of the
two girls.
Of the two girls.
Before the twins.
Uh-huh. Her confirmation night. Janet is ironing Heather's...
Oh, they're Catholic.
Yes. They are devout Catholics.
All right. Are we sure it's not us?
Hold up. Janet's ironing Heather's confirmation dress. Again, some stories say she's, like, hemming it. So
she's doing something.
She's messing with the dress.
You don't mess with the dress.
When she hears a tearing sound from above her, she is fortunate enough that she dodges because the large ceiling light has been ripped from the ceiling and is falling on top of her. She ducks out of the way.
Does she grab the dress?
The dress is fine, I think. Okay. Shannon is hit in the head with a glancing blow, though.
You mean Sharon?
Sharon, yeah.
The baby?
Yeah, one of the texts said Shannon. This is like a copy right out of one of them, and it said Shannon.
Probably so. A computer when they were typing in Sharon, it switched it to Shannon.
So,
I'm right here, hi.
But they were hit in the head with a glancing blow of it.
And what year was this?
This would be in 85.
Okay, so that kid's at least 10 years, about 10 years old then.
Yeah.
It's about Eli's age.
Yeah.
Aww.
Well, yeah. So here is her report on the story.
We have a 4-foot by 2-foot ceiling light. Mm-hmm. And it came without no warning at all. In a matter of a split second, it came crashing down onto the kitchen table.
That must have been very frightening.
It was very frightening because we didn't know. It was unexpected, and it wasn't like a light that had broken naturally. It didn't tip. It didn't sway. It just came crashing down. And it gouged Shannon on the forehead, and it gouged a mark onto the refrigerator. And this was about a half an hour before we went to church.
Shannon is the name.
Yeah. So I think that that one, Sharon, I think that was a...
Type
whoever
on
typed,
parts,
yeah, whatever website I got that information from.
Thank goodness,
from.
Because rhyming names are not okay.
Yeah.
I don't have my phone to Google the names of the children. But again, like, you have your kid there. Aw.
Yeah.
Probably just watching mom sew or whatever, and then pa-da-dunk, what you get? Oh. If only they hadn't bought the rug.
Yeah, it's all the rug's fault. I mean, that makes me wonder if it was a haunted rug, now that you mention it,
Thank
though.
You.
Because everything was fine until, well, it wasn't, I guess.
They just moved in.
Yeah. Yeah, even with the rug, they still had 18 months of goodness before everything kicked up. Okay, so anyways. The entity in the house definitely seemed to like the father, Jack. There are stories of him levitating and his wife being attacked. One night, after being intimate with each other, Janet was literally ripped out of the bed. And Jack grabbed her by the arms and, like, to keep her onto the bed. And it was like a tug of war over Janet. Until eventually it gave up and he pulled her back onto the bed, and then like pounding on the door or on the walls started, and the putrid smell returned.
Oh my.
Yeah. A few nights after that, Shannon was pulled off her bed and tossed down the stairs.
What happened to Karen? Karen's like, oh dear. Bye.
Karen is Shannon now.
No, there's twins.
Oh, the other one. Yeah, right.
I got you. I'm picking up your story. I got you.
Yes, sorry. Yes, bye, Shannon.
Have a nice fall. Oh. You know what happened? Shannon was playing on the rug. The rug got mad. There it is.
You left your Barbie on my stain.
That's a really nice stain.
This one makes me sad.
No, it doesn't involve a doggy.
Yes. So the family heard the sound of scratching and rapping on the walls, which mentioned earlier. They would hear phantom dogs running through the halls, and invisible snakes hissed as well.
Hmm. Okay.
There was also a time where their 75-pound German Shepherd Simon was flung against a door.
Aww.
And the dog was picked on a couple times, but that was like the worst one. But yeah.
Was he okay?
I guess so, yeah. They never say like he was brutally injured or anything, but you know, he was definitely okay. Thrown against a door.
Oh, that's not okay. Bad rug, bad rug. Did Simon pee on the rug?
Oh,
I'm just
saying, Simon.
What? We gotta look at the timeline. No, that's not okay. It makes me sad. Of course, you're like, Shannon went down the stairs. Well, okay, whatever. Not the dog.
So here's an interesting bit, though, is that the neighbors would hear this stuff. Like, they would, even when they aren't home, they would hear screaming coming from the house. You know, usually this paranormal stuff, like, it doesn't leave the house, you know? Yeah. But they could, and they even felt the presence in their homes. Like, it would leave and, you know, go to the surrounding area.
So it almost sounds like it's something that predates the house, then.
We'll get to that.
Oh, good. Look at me. It's like,
you're doing it.
It's like I'm an expert or something.
Well, you're channeling it like I do, you know? It's like you see the script.
I didn't. I thought that we had Sharon and Karen until I heard my name, Ish. The name I wish I had, Shannon. Any name except for Shanna. Anyway, so Simon is okay, though. It's all that matters.
Yes.
Okay.
And because of this, Mary and John also feel and experience things as well. Mary said that their mattress levitated a few times. And they started, like, studying everything paranormal that they could get their hands on. In January of 1986, they learn about the Warrens.
Of course.
Oh, and gosh. Get a hold of their number and give it to Jack and Janet. And so they give the Warrens a call. The Warrens come over and give them a pretty intense interview. And, you know, very accusational is how they put it. And they're like, are you Satanists? Are you occultists? Have you done anything with the occult? Have you ever used a Ouija board before?
Have you seen my prayer area? We like God.
And, you know, they're like, no, we are devout Catholics. We've never done any of this stuff before. And so the Warrens are like, okay, well, you know, let's let's take a look around the house, see what Lorraine can feel, because Lorraine is, medium.
Well, at this time period, it's the 80, if 86 for them, is this when things have already started going downhill? Has the devil already been put on trial, kind of thing?
Amityville was, there have been at least two movies by this point.
Okay.
So, like, they're pretty well known.
So they're probably being a little more harsh because of the flack they're getting.
Oh, for sure. I bet. So. Yeah, I bet.
So they're probably trying to vet.
Yeah.
I'm not slapping the Warrens down or anything, but...
But sometimes you need to slap the Warrens down. It's the Warrens.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah, it's very sad.
They go through and Lorraine identifies four separate beings in the house. One is a homeless elderly woman. Okay. Who's just more confused than anything.
No.
There is a violent young girl, but others describe it as a violent young woman. You know, like, okay. So.
Sounds like she's between 14 and 16. Got it. Okay.
Yeah. A man who died a tragic death in the house.
Hence the cape.
Yes. And lastly.
He was the Phantom of the Opera.
And lastly, one that isn't a spirit. But a demon.
Well, I told you, the oppression stage is obviously there.
Yes, and they say it's able to manipulate the other three as though they're puppets.
Aww.
They also say that based on the information that they're devout Catholics and everything, that probably the only way that this thing is active is that it had been on the property for probably decades, laying dormant, and probably rose...
Maybe their religion pissed it off.
Well, their guess is the emotional energy generated by the girl's entrance into puberty.
They always say that. It's always, although that's a very common, thread, is that there's just some kind of energy for a female as they get into that stage. And you hear it, it's not just the Warrens who say it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm always just like, because I even heard recently, it was mentioned, I think, on last podcast, and I want to say that Henry mentioned it, and I'm just like... Once again, the girl's getting the flack for all this stuff. Listen, we ate the apple. Bad stuff. We know, okay? We're sorry.
Now having babies is really painful.
Don't blame us. Don't blame our menses for this, too. We're just in pain.
So they figured that it was very, the demon was very reactive to anything religious. So they decided to do some religious provocation.
Well, why wouldn't you?
Break
out the crucifixes, get out the holy water.
So they start playing religious music and start praying throughout the house.
The rosary.
And as they're doing this, mirrors are shaking, dresser drawers are opening and closing. And on one of the mirrors, it writes a nasty word that I won't use on this podcast because I'm not allowed to.
Is it a four-letter word?
It's more than four letters.
Wow.
And it says, get out of this house.
Oh, okay. Does it say that or write that?
It writes that.
Okay.
And they say the only way to really stave this thing off is with holy water and prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting because they just use religious provocation on it. And
we have to make sure it's actually here. And made it
really angry. There is a story where Jack is on his knees praying the rosary and then starts getting dragged across the floor on his knees.
Well,
again, doesn't like the praying.
To quote one priest who said to us, if only we believed in God more, those things wouldn't happen to us in our house.
Nothing will hurt you.
Yes. If There's only no... you actually believe in God.
Oh my gosh.
Literally called a man of the cloth to come fix the problem here, but thank you.
And that guy's preaching in our area again somewhere, apparently.
Is he Catholic again?
Yeah.
Oh, that's.
He's always been Catholic. He was like a monk for a while, that's all. He left the priesthood to be a monk, and now he's back.
Hmm. There are good people and there are bad people, listeners, okay? Yeah, we know there are good priests and there are not so good priests.
You know the saying, what's a med school student who gets straight C's? A doctor.
No.
That's this guy as a priest,
He was the only bad one out of all the ones we ever had come over. Everyone else is very wonderful.
Yeah. We've had mostly winners.
Yes, we have. Shout out to all the priests in the area that we know. And Danville, Bloomsburg, and Benton. They're all wonderful.
Yeah. So Ed lays out the four stages of demonic activity.
Of course he does.
Infestation,
mm-hmm.
oppression, possession, death.
Oh, who's possessed now?
And so he,
I called the oppression.
Yeah, so he warns them, possession's probably coming next, you but know?
If, the thing is, if you do that, you prime them to look for that. And if there are kids who want to be noticed because there's four girls, some girl might act funky. So now, if it's one of the youngest ones, I'm not going to believe it. I've already decided I'm not going to believe it. Because, like, I don't know, like, I continue.
Yep.
Is it so, Karen?
No.
Oh, okay. Is so, it Shannon?
No. Okay. So also during this night, as they're investigating, because, like, as, you know, after they realize what's going on in the house, they decide to start investigating that night. And so they, one of the big things that happens is one of the TVs turn on and it's just like white static, mm-hmm. you know, old school TVs. But through the static, there are three figures watching them. So that happened.
Don't like that.
Yeah. So, back to Jack, though. He was sexually assaulted several times.
Wow.
The book goes into very graphic detail about one of them, which I will just do the beginning of.
Don't want to hear
no,
that.
But he awakes with a start. He said similar to falling off a cliff, you know, like those dreams where yeah. you're falling and you snap awake. So that happens. And that was his key, like something's happening, because it happens frequently to him, this rude awakening. And usually what happens is when one of them wakes up, the other one is being able to, like, is held at bay, you know, like, just completely out, almost comatose. So, while they are in a state of, like, sleep paralysis. And he said he knew he wasn't dreaming when he noticed, quote, her scales.
My.
Yeah. So here's a direct quote, and this is through an interview section. So I'm going to be like kind of moderating my tone a little bit to, you mm-hmm. know, for questionnaire versus Jack.
I want
to
hear really good accent for Jack, a really good, deep, burly Jack.
Well, her skin was paper white. Is that?
He's not from the South.
No. Okay.
But good try.
Her skin was paper white, but it was covered in some places with the scaly surface I mentioned, and then in other places with open sores. The kind you'd think a leper or something would have or something. And these sores were running with pus.
Oh.
How old was she? I would estimate around 65 or 70. I can't be sure. What else did you notice about her? She had long, white, scraggly hair, and her eyes were all red with, and the inside of her mouth and gums were green. Mm. Some of her teeth were missing, but those she had were very long and vampire-like.
Mm.
What about her body? That was the weird thing. Her body itself was firm, like that of a younger woman.
Like a Lilith almost, like a succubus.
Yeah.
Okay.
Excellent. Segue.
Well, so, you're welcome.
Because it goes on to talk about how, in, again, graphic detail, how this thing has its way with him. So he knew it wasn't a dream because he was sore the next day.
Hmm.
Yeah. Like, so that's when he knew, like, it wasn't a nightmare or anything like that. He tells Janet everything. And she, and here's, this is more quote from the book. Janet Smurl resolved to get the church directly involved in the haunting, no matter what it took.
Mm-hmm.
So Janet says, I suppose I was a little angry when I called that morning. Here I'd been a faithful Catholic all my life, but the church wasn't helping at all.
Good for her to get cranky.
She smiles. I'm slow to anger, but once I get worked up, I can be pretty formidable.
That was like your mom. God rest her soul. You never wanted to get Deb angry.
Janet was prepared to make her case argumentatively if need be. Jack at work, the children at school. She sat down next to the phone, looked up the number for the diocese office, and called. The receptionist put Janet on hold for a few minutes. And later, a man who identified himself as Father Calloway picked up the phone. Good morning, the priest said. He sounded robust and intelligent and friendly. Hello, Father. My name is Janet Smurl. I'm a parishioner at West Pittston. That's a nice town. Yes, it is, Father. She drew herself up and said, Father, I need to talk to you about some problems we've been having here. Family problems? Not exactly, Father. It's about a haunting. There's a brief silence on the other end. A haunting, I see. I'm not a hysterical woman, Father. Well, I'm sure you're not, Janet. Why don't you tell me about it? Then you believe in hauntings, Father? Of course I do. Janet could scarcely believe what she was hearing. She'd been prepared for battle. This priest was not only not arguing or evading, he was agreeing with her. It's been terrible, Janet said, letting some of her feelings come through clearly in her voice. Why don't you tell me about it, dear? So Janet told him. Everything. First from the wrappings in the wall to the rocking chair that creaked by itself as if somebody invisible were sitting in it.
Oh, she skipped the rug. I see.
To the rape last night. This is very serious, Father Calloway said. Very serious. And the problem is we can't get anybody in the church to help us, not in any serious way. What if I go to the Chancellor? Do you mean it? Yes, Father Calloway said. I do mean it, and I'll be happy to make a case for you. I think that once all the facts are laid out, the Chancellor will be very interested in this case. It was almost too much to hope for, Janet said, feeling hope for the first time in many long, dark months. And so the priest says he'll look into it, and he's like, call me back tomorrow, and I'll let you know what I find out. So she calls back the next day, and they go, there's no Father Calloway.
What?
Yeah. They're like, we don't know who you're talking about right now.
So she, like, talked to the demon on the phone. Girl, that's why you gotta go to the church. You get yourself in your car and you go for a drive. Oh, that's messed up.
So, yeah.
The demon's just like, go to grid. Somewhere in the walls.
So the knockings get worse. They become poundings on the walls now. Jack and Janet would be slapped, bitten, and tickled.
Listen, that can, like, be terrible. Tickled
to the point where, like, you can't breathe, you know? And then pig noises would be heard within the walls.
Okay.
Yeah. And the church straight up refused to help. And then they have their first exorcism. They finally get someone from Connecticut.
The Warrens?
Yes.
There you go.
The Warrens get a priest from Connecticut to come down because no one in Pennsylvania is, like, helping them.
Interesting.
So a Connecticut priest drives down to Pennsylvania.
That's not too far.
It's a day's drive. It's not bad. You know,
we've done it.
Yeah, we did.
It's fine.
It's like 6 hours. From Scranton area, it's probably like.
You stop in Sturbridge, enjoy a little bit of stuff.
That's right.
Go to upstate New York for a bit.
After the first exorcism, quote, the Smurls were naturally optimistic about their future. The scent of roses lingered. The walls were quiet. And for a few hours at least. And during this time, the phone scarcely stopped ringing. By this time, there were many in West Pittston who were well aware what was happening to the Smurls. They called as concerned friends to see how the family was doing following the religious rites. Those who called 6 days following the exorcism heard about Karen's illness. Those who called a few days later were even more shocked that 16-year-old Dawn was in the bathroom and she had taken her clothes off in preparation for a shower, and she'd recall later hearing a rapping on the wall but assumed it was just the usual rapping. Mm-hmm. So she gets in the shower and she gets herself all soaped up, leans her head back into the water, and then she feels something seize her arms. And right in front of her, she feels a presence. So she leaps through the plastic curtain out onto, like, the bathroom floor, you know, screaming for mom and dad to come.
Yeah.
She grabs a towel, puts it around herself, and, you know, like, that whole situation ends.
That's good.
And they realize that it's back, you know, it's all back on. So they go to church again several more times asking for help. They're denied every time. And they realize it's most likely because the Warrens are involved. And everyone knows about Amityville. And this is at the point now where it's called the Amityville hoax. You know, like, we're at this point.
And has the devil been put on trial is the question. That whole situation.
Yeah.
So Google that really fast. Because if it was at that point, there's a moment where there are 5 different priests ready to do their speech.
Yes, that would have happened. That was 1981.
Yeah. And then what happens is the judge says, you know, religious stuff isn't fact. So therefore, I'm paraphrasing, but therefore you cannot bring anything religious in here because it's not factual. And so all 5 of the priests stand up and they walk out.
Yes.
And so that was like the moment that the Warrens were like cut off, which is crazy because it's like not their fault, but whatever.
Yes.
So now I can see why they don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole.
Yeah, right. So there is a local newspaper called The Ledger.
Mm-hmm.
And in it, Father Gerald F. Mullally from the Scranton Diocese says, we believe what the family is telling us. It's the explanation for what they are experiencing that we're not sure of. So they're like, yeah, we believe it. We just don't know what's causing it.
Okay.
And so, yeah, I thought that was an interesting, like,
public
comment there. multiple priests then do visit the property and bless the house, but they all say nothing. Like, we didn't experience anything. One of them even stays over for 3 days, two nights, and he leaves. He's like, there's nothing here. And didn't experience one single thing, so he's gone. So they have a second exorcism. Nothing really changes at all. So then they take to the newspapers, which is where that article comes from, because they're just like, you know, throwing spaghetti at a wall, seeing will stick. Yeah. They're just looking for anyone to help at this point. Instead, reporters and cameras show up.
Sit on the lawn, man.
Uh-huh. They walk out the front door and they're greeted with camera flashes and people and questions and teenagers sitting in cars pointing at the house, you know, all day long. Everyone looking for, you know, and hoping to get a sighting of something in the windows.
Yep.
So the Warrens take the Smurls onto the Richard Bay talk show. Okay. And I've never heard of it. But I watched an episode, like clips of an episode. I'm like, oh, I recognize the theme song. Like, okay. It's, you know, it's a show that was on the 80s, and I definitely recognize that music. It's a pretty typical talk show. You know, he plays like dumb games with the you know, contestants, or yeah. You know. But so to quote the book again, Bay is known as a tough interviewer, not excessive, never malicious or petty, but his questions are hardball as opposed to softball. He's well dressed, tanned, confident. And he managed to seem genuinely interested in the play of the Smurls while remaining skeptical about some of their experiences. He asked questions his viewing audience would, like how did the Smurls know that their experiences couldn't be explained by natural causes? Were they a troubled family and therefore given kind of a quiet hysteria?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, no offense. Yeah,
he's asking. He's asking the hard questions.
Did he ask, where is the rug?
He asked if they came from broken or damaged homes, if they ever sought professional help or psychiatric help.
Mm-hmm.
These were all the sorts of questions people like the Smurls always got at the beginning of an interview. But after about 10 minutes, something curious started to happen. Before, Bay and the audience alike had been given to occasional uncomfortable titters and laughs. But as Janet and Jack began to talk at length about everything from the mysterious black form that moved from one side of the house to the other, about Jack's rape, Shannon being hurled down the stairwell, gradually you could see a change in both Bay and the audience. Where before they'd been skeptical, now they are rapt and serious.
Mm-hmm.
Afterward, Janet said, "The audience was very nice to us."
Aww.
Lorraine said, "They knew you were telling the truth and they respected you for it."
Yeah.
And Mary then says, quote, "The day Janet and Jack appeared on the TV show was one of the worst days ever on our side of the house. The banging got so loud at one point that we actually had to leave the house. Finally, the noise quieted down enough that we could go back in with the girls, but then the banging started up again on Janet and Jack's side. It was loud enough that it kept us up all night." And then John chimes in saying, "That same day I started experiencing the psychic colds again, the cold spots.
Mm-hmm.
It was like something was drawing the heat from my body. I remember shivering so hard that I was afraid my teeth were going to crack. I was worried about Mary, too, given her heart condition. The doctor said the worst thing that could happen was her constant stress. And that's what we were all under. Constant mm-hmm. stress." So 3 nights later, asleep, Janet Smurl sensed the covers being eased sinuously off her body and cast on the floor. As her eyes started to flutter open, her head began to rush with a disorienting feeling of losing control of her body. She saw that she was now suspended in midair. What was even more startling was that in a perfect prone position, she was being floated across the room as if she were undergoing some lighter-than-gravity experience. Then she bumped into the bedroom wall and bounced away. Sounds a lot like Amityville.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Then the demon quit having fun with her and decided to hurt her viciously. Janet said, "Obviously, it's not something I'll ever forget. It twisted me around several times, then hurled me into the far wall. Just before I crashed, I crossed my hands over my skull to protect it from the collision. Then the demon turned me over and quickly at such an angle that my hands and arms were outstretched, and I had only a few seconds to put myself into the fetal position because I could see that it was going to catapult me again into the wall, this time trying to break my hands and arms. At the time, all the time this was happening, I was screaming for Jack to wake up, really pleading with him, but of course the demon had seen to it that Jack was in a deep psychic sleep.
Mm-hmm.
What happened finally, I can't even really describe. All I can think of was being in a trance. I saw everything in our shadowy bedroom very clearly, but at the same time had the sense that I was caught between two worlds. This one and the life after. Almost as if I was hanging between life and death itself. Suddenly I was lying next to Jack and I was sobbing, really out of control. And he woke up and tried to calm me down, asking me what had happened. And I showed him the bruises where the demon had slammed me into the wall. And then I went back to sobbing again. I was afraid I'd really been pushed over the edge. You know the feeling. When you just can't handle things anymore. That's how I was.
Mm-hmm.
I really couldn't deal with things anymore. Jack's test on the edge came the following night.
Oh, geez.
Jack says, quote, "The kids knew what had happened to their mother being levitated and all, so they let her rest all day and did all the housework themselves and even helped with dinner. They could see how precarious her health was getting. I told her to call Ed and Lorraine while I was at work just to keep her calm. Well, she did, and talking to them helped a lot. And when I got home, we had dinner and watched a little TV. Janet was exhausted, drained, so we put the kids to bed early and then sacked out early ourselves. According to the digital clock, I was asleep for about half hour before I heard the thing." The thing Jack referred to was a creature roughly 8 feet in height that stood on two legs, but had the top, but on top of its wide shoulders, a furry head with blinding red eyes and a pig-like snout.
This is Amityville, though, like the pig-like snout. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Standing at the end of the bed, the creature slavered and slobbered and clawed at the air with rake-like fingers, seeming to threaten Jack with evisceration. Even more repugnant than the shape of the creature's face was the slobbering noises of its lips, which resembled pieces of liver as they took in air and saliva.
Ew. Not winning a beauty contest, what
yeah,
you're saying.
Right? Yeah, right? Janet says, quote, "Jack's scream woke me up. And almost instantly, I started screaming, too, even though by then the creature he described was gone. I'd never seen Jack that shaken by anything before. He'd thrown himself off the bed and lay in a ball in the middle of the floor. In the moonlight, you could see that his whole body was covered in sweat. His hands were in fists that he kept pounding against the floor. I couldn't tell which emotion was stronger in him, fear or anger. Mm-hmm. The whole family was going through that. We were tired of being afraid, yet we didn't want to give in to the demon, either. I went over and lay down on the floor next to Jack and slowly began to run my hands softly up and down his back, trying to calm him down. His breathing was still coming in big gasping chunks. It took me 10 minutes to get him calmed down. Then he said to me, 'Now I know what hell's going to look like.'"
But he's not going to go to hell. He's going to go to purgatory.
But still, just seeing it, you know.
Well, yeah, it's just like your dream that you had.
Yeah, which we'll get into in a midweek episode, yep. I'm sure. So, I apologize. The exorcism they had was the first one. I don't know if I said that or not. I might have said second.
No, you said it. I said first. Yeah.
Okay, they have their second exorcism, and life is good. After this whole incident, like, second exorcism comes. And for 4 weeks, everything is great. Janet even calls Lorraine one morning, and she says, "The house smells like roses." And like, she's just so happy. And everything is good for a while, and then Thanksgiving comes, and the family's planning for Christmas, and then they start hearing a knocking on the walls. And they know it's all starting back up again. And
they say, "Kidding, we're gonna move."
So, there's one night where Jack is up late watching TV, he turns it off. And he sees a black caped form down the hall.
Oh, looking dapper.
But this time,
the Christmas party.
This time it is beckoning him, like calling it over to him. And he instantly,
here,
he wants you. So he instantly knew what was happening because of the steps of demonic activity.
Yeah.
That it was aiming for the possession step. At which point he bolted from the chair, keeping his rosary tight in his hand, and the figure started towards him. So with the figure in sight, as he slowly like backs his way up the stairs, it starts getting closer. And he's making his way up the stairs, and it's getting closer and closer. And then he starts to pray. And he's just over and over and over. He's saying this prayer that the Warrens taught him. And slowly it starts to withdraw and get quiet, you know, smaller and smaller as it just backs away. And then it fades and disappears. At which point, Jack decides not to mention this to his wife and children. And he wants them to think that everything is still fine, that the scent of roses would stay. But that isn't the case. So by this point, the novel comes to an end, saying that they are still living there. And not novel. I keep saying novel. The book ends saying they are still living there and still trying to deal with this. We now know that in 1987, they do pack up and they leave. It follows them, at which point they have a third exorcism and have not had any activity since.
Third time's a charm.
And that is the briefest of versions of the Smurl haunting, because again,
told
the book
you could
has,
have done two parter
by
that
by yeah but I would have had to rewrite everything and re-research everything to, you know, to make it a two-parter.
Do we know where they moved to?
No, I didn't get that. Just
I wanted
that they moved.
To send them some roses.
Some of the children have like spoken up about it though,
as a yes or a no,
that it happened.
That it happened. Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because I don't want to say satanic panic, but like when you're watching all these movies and you start believing in it, you know, are you actually seeing it or are you priming yourself for it? You know, like I don't know.
Yeah. And so many YouTube videos and stories and articles and everything, they all start in 1985. And like this whole story I told you, it all starts in 1985. But it's been happening since 1974, you know, like that's when they move into the house. But all these stories talk about like, oh, in 1985, Janet was doing the laundry. Like, no, that was 1974, maybe 75, you know.
I know because I did my research. Yay!
But then there's that whole 11-year gap. Like, what happened in that time? You know, was it a big lull or was it just more annoyances? You know, they do talk about like, the little things, you know, things get stolen and found in weird places and, you know, the knocking.
Like our
and,
house, yeah. Well, it's like you look at just, like we always say, like the Facebook memories pop up and you're like, oh, remember when that happened? Probably little things were happening, but nothing major, nothing terrifying.
Yeah.
So, maybe they got rid of the rug.
They say the really terrifying stuff is when 1985 to 1986, that period is the worst of it, which is... Yeah, that's definitely the worst of it, as we learned here.
Well, I'm so glad you took control for this week and told the story. I'm horrified by it. There are parts that have been cut out, listeners. You can do your own research.
Yeah.
I try to do a family-friendly version as much as possible.
Because, again, some of those scenes, they go into some
graphic detail.
Really graphic detail. It's gross.
I don't want to hear that. I have to go clean my ears. So I actually have an entire document of midweek mini ideas, but now I kind of want to have you do your story this Wednesday.
Okay.
So we can get that out so it connects to this, because I think dreams are important. Like, if this guy did see some 8-foot creepy creature that made horrible noises, okay.
Yeah.
Like, that's what hell looks like to him. I get it. Even if it was a fever dream, you know, we think of our most horrifying thing.
Yeah.
So, I don't not believe Jack. Let's put it that way. Anybody who will admit that something like that happened to him, I already feel like there's a validation.
True,
male rape is so rarely talked about.
Yeah.
So, anyway, with that very happy thought, let's go ahead and end this episode. So find us on Instagram, find us on Facebook, of course, gamesoverboard.com, any of those places. Find us on Reddit. We love talking to people in our subreddit, the Wellhouse Exorcism.
Wellhouse Exorcism has an Instagram account now, too, so there are two Instagram accounts to follow.
Mm-hmm. Didn't I not say Instagram earlier?
You said follow us on Instagram, okay. But I want to just specify that, you know, there is an actual Wellhouse Instagram.
Yeah, there's Games Overboard, and there is Wellhouse Exorcism. Mm-hmm. I've been posting pretty religiously. I didn't post yesterday because we were too busy with our party, but I do post regularly. Of course, we have an X Twitter page. And we, of course, on Facebook, we are under Games Overboard. I will never leave Games Overboard. No matter how famous I get on this podcast, I'll always stay with you, honey.
That's right.
Like a poltergeist.
Thank you.
Annoying, noisy.
Like a stain on a carpet.
Just keeps coming back. So romantic. Have a great weekend, as always.
Think spooky thoughts.